Now, as I said a little earlier, it's something we all do from the first seconds of life. But how well we do it can have such an impact on our health and well-being. Breathe. Nose, low and slow is the best advice of our next guest. She's the New Zealand breathing physiotherapist and breathing dysfunction specialist of some 30 years, Dr. Tanya Clifton-Smith, and is co-founder, along with Dinah Bradley of BreathingWorks.com, of the first independent breathing pattern disorders clinic in Australasia. Also, co-developer of the Bradcliffe breathing method to reduce stress and anxiety, allow a better night's sleep, clearer thinking, and improve performance in sports and work. In times like this, also just getting through the day better and calmer. According to Tanya, your breathing is the conductor of the orchestra. If you're not breathing well, nothing will work in harmony. Dr. Tanya Clifton-Smith's new book is How to Take a Breath, and she is with us now. Welcome, Tanya. Thanks so much for your time.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. I love thinking and talking about how to breathe well. I've spent a lot of time thinking and working on it, and I'm really looking forward to what you might share with us. I'm curious, also at the start, as to your route towards specialising in breathing dysfunction. Could you give us a little of the history? Because it sounds fascinating.
Okay, well, I originally sort of did physical education and then physiotherapy, and in my early 20s, as we all do, travel over abroad and ended up in the UK in a clinic where I was working with a cardiologist, a psychiatrist, a respiratory physician. So they were specialists and they were treating people for stress-related disorders. And they weren't just the average person, they were really the literati and glitterati of the UK. So they were politicians, actors, singers, and very eminent people that really were suffering burnout and exhaustion. The fascinating thing also was on a Wednesday we would see survivors of torture, and as a little green Kiwi, it was a pretty big eye-opening thing. But the first port of call before they saw any physician was to calm them down through breathing. Not talk therapy, it was to calm them down using breath work. And that was my introduction 30 years ago.
So from around, I think, 2000, you joined forces, as we said, with your colleague and established Breathing Works and developed this method. When you did that, with whom were you working then? What's the sort of scope and scale of people who you've been able to help?
Well, obviously my career has traversed from public sector, where I helped, you know, work with the chronic pain specialists and stress management specialists and in the physiotherapy departments, through to the public private sector, working for a decade with High Performance Sport New Zealand with elite athletes, and working with anyone from asthma through to sleep-related disorders through to stressed individuals in the corporate world. But more importantly, I feel in the last year, I have been working internationally, obviously via Zoom, educating physiotherapists around the world on breathing dysfunction for rehabilitation of COVID, both in the hospital setting and in the home setting. So that's been fascinating. So I feel like I've been involved with the COVID world quite intricately for the last 18 months.
That is particularly interesting because one of the worst components I see of a serious COVID case is that struggle for breath, because we do take it so for granted. We take it so for granted. We have our entire time on the planet that the air comes in and the air goes out and we can function. It is not as simple as that.
I know. I mean, so many things can go wrong. I think the main component is the breathlessness. And breathlessness is interesting because it is a perceived individual function. It's like pain. How do you describe pain? Well, how do you describe breathlessness? And it's important to unpack what, when someone comes in and says, I can't breathe, it's so important to unpack, what do you mean? Is it because you're unfit, or is it because your lungs are tight and tense? Or, you know, are you so much in your mind that your nervous system has revved your breathing rate up so that you really are revving at such a high rate, you're feeling breathless? So breathlessness is not as simple as just feeling out of breath. It can be multifactorial in triggering and also in treatment.
The physiological and the psychological also so interlinked here. And when we think about anxiety and how that can lead to panic attacks and, again, feeling like you can't breathe, we think of that as a psychological condition. But actually, if your stress hormones and, as you said, your nervous system are whizzing along at an unmanageable rate, that is physiological. And a lot of what you do, I'm sure, is how breathing can be part of the story of calming a system that's a bit overcooked. I wonder if we should begin at the beginning, Tanya. I've got so much to talk about, but shall we begin at the beginning? What is good practice, and what do most of us not do well when it comes to how we take a breath?
Okay, good practice, I would say, is just to check in intermittently in your day to your body. I mean, a lot of the language, and Catherine, I even noticed yourself, you're talking about thinking a lot, but I feel what we have lost is feeling. Example of that is someone will come into the clinic and they'll say, I feel, you know, I think I'm stressed, or I've got stress. And I'm like, well, how does that feel? Unpack it. Where do you feel it? What's happening to your body? So by that, it's increasing your awareness throughout the day. Little reminders to stop. Feel your body. How tense are you? Are your shoulders tight and tense? Then feel your breath. If your shoulders are tight and tense, you're going to be breath holding. So it's the dualism of physical awareness, following your breath, and then once you've calmed, then tune up with yourself. Am I working on the most important thing that I should be working at if you're at work, or what am I feeling? What's going on? So it's stop, self-awareness, then follow the breath. Even if you're not doing it well, once you start to observe the breath, we know in science, it actually takes you towards the relaxation chemicals in the body. So awareness is definitely the first step.
Good breathing also, many of us are mouth breathers, and I'm proud of myself, and I want to really encourage people of converting from being predominantly a mouth breather to a nose breather, even in sleep.
Yes.
That took a lot of work. And also,
oh, well done.
I know. I'm proud. It's a lot of work. A lot of work on it. It is possible. And the second thing is breathing and using that abdomen extension rather than the shallow chest breath. So just talk us through even the basics that we might want to check in on.
Yeah, so once you've done the awareness, tuning into it, and you can check yourselves now at home if you're sitting there. It's one hand on your upper chest and one over your belly, one over your abdomen. We call this the high-low test. And what you do is you just feel your breath, which hand is moving first and most, your upper or your lower, and are you breathing with your nose or your mouth? If you wish, you could time yourself with breaths per minute. So at rest, breathing well for an adult should be in and out of your nose. Your lower hand, so your belly, your abdomen should be moving first and most. And your rate should be between, say, 8 to 12 breaths per minute. That is what we consider for an adult. It is different for under 15. That is what we consider for an adult to be breathing well. So, yes, you are so correct. Tip-top health with the nose, especially in times of COVID, we really, really advocate nasal hygiene. And there's many things you can try yourself, from simple nasal douching, a nasal rinse, through to going for a swim in the sea. They're the first steps, but you've got to figure out if you aren't nasal breathing, why? So, you know, even in the book, there's heaps of things about the checklist of going through as to figuring out why aren't you nasally breathing. Then move to the upper hand or lower hand, which hand is moving first or most. Often we breath hold, so we're tight and tense. So one of the famous Bradcliffe mottos is when in doubt, breathe out. So just stop often and breathe out. A simple exhalation will relax your shoulders, which sends a message to the brain that you're okay. Also, when we exhale, the heart relaxes. Many, many physiological things happen on the exhale. And then thirdly, obviously, the belly movement. And the belly movement's important because the diaphragm, the most important muscle of breathing, is a very, very strong thing. And we know that when we use that well, it's like a pump. If you were trying to clear out a blocked drain, you'd do it with a bit of force, not just very gently. So when the diaphragm pumps well. It actually cleans and clears the immune system, like your lymphatic system. A really cool thing I learned the other day is it cleans the brain. So when you breathe in, it pumps the cerebral spinal fluid up in the brain, and when you breathe out, it brings it down. So literally, mechanics of breathing well cleans the brain, makes you have a robust lymphatic system, good for movement, good for voice, very good for voice, and gut health. You imagine that thing pumping up and down on your gut all day. So it's quite a multifactorial thing. But yes, nose, low meaning belly, and slow meaning just a little bit longer out than in.
I'm getting calmer just talking to you.
Good.
The other key thing about nose breathing is, of course, is it's clearing a lot of particles that the mouth doesn't, which helps as well. But the whole process I found converting from mouth to nose breathing was just slower and deeper. And I think now if that diaphragm is like, I've got a bit of Scottish in me, so I think of like a bagpipe and how long it can take to fill a bagpipe. You can take a very long breath and that abdomen can take a very long time to expand. And all these things that we're talking about is not just the optimal way of getting, you know, the right kind of mix of oxygen and all the things our physiology does with the intake of air, but it is also slowing the process, Tanya, and that slowing the process is why good breathing can be so calming.
Well, that's why we say, well, okay, now this is where we've got to be very careful, and this is where I in part agreed to write this, is because I want to definitely say if someone has got a dysfunctional breathing, please see an expert in this field, because it's not as simple as that. If someone's got a lung disease, to slow it down too much may be very detrimental to them. So it's not necessarily about slowing it down. We know in science, yes, the slower it is, you move to a state called residence and coherent breathing. However, there is a process to get there, and one must actually go through a whole lot of exercises to get there, because their fundamental pattern has been set at a different rate. So when we talk about slow, we mean breathing out more. And definitely a lower, slower rate does help, but you need to know how to get there with guidance. Does that make sense?
Completely. This is an individual piece of equipment.
It is. And it really depends on, because we are an individualized thing, it really depends on looking at the whole person. So, for example, is someone coming in and they say they can't get a good breath. Why? Is it because they are tight and tense, so it's mechanical, or because they're breathing too fast, so their biochemistry is wrong, or maybe their mind is thinking too much? So it really needs unpacking when it starts to get into some of the chronic things. But yes, slower we like, and definitely nose, definitely abdominal. They're definitely factors that all help towards the balance of breathing well.
You mentioned holding breath, which a lot of people do when they're concentrating hard, and then they suddenly notice themselves taking a bit of a gulp of air, or a weird sigh comes out at some point. Let's talk about screen apnea, because we're familiar with sleep apnea, I think many of us, the pauses taken during sleep. But we're so into our screens these days that it's actually become a thing. Could you explain it, please?
Well, I mean, you know, I talk about a type test that you can take in the book, and that is when you're sitting in front of a device, it's any electronic device, and we start to get involved with what we're doing. And, you know, if anyone wants to try it now while they're sitting and listening to this, just pretend you're sitting at the computer or you're on your phone and start typing really, really fast, or start texting. If you go, 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 stop. And feel what has happened to your body and your breath. What you should notice is often that people have held their breath and they've held it on the inhale, which then tightens all the neck and shoulder muscles, which are the rescue breathing muscles. And that then leads to a change in the biochemistry. The body starts to change and adjust. With time, originally you actually retain oxygen, but over time you drop it. So you end up with these dips in your oxygen over a day. So it's equivalent to sleep apnea, which, you know, a lot of people suffer from, but it's dips during the day when you're actually attached to your screen, and it's not good. It is so unhealthy.
Can we talk, please, about some of the examples you may be able to give us? I want to come to some of the trauma or anxiety examples in a moment, because right. there'll be a lot of interest in that. But in, right. first principles again, the role of breath in self-soothing in regulation. Many of us will sort of yep. use it to try and calm us down when we're distressed. What do we know about the yep. science of it, Tanya?
The science, well, it should be one of the first things that we do, probably under the age of five, that when we breathe well, nose low and slow, and at a certain rate, we know that the body is in a homeostatic balance. So therefore, the nervous system, in particular something called your autonomic nervous system, which has got two branches, you go and you stop, so you're red and green. Red is obviously called your sympathetic, and that is fills us with adrenaline. When we're breathing well, this is in harmony and we're sitting in the green state, which is rest, digest, calm. But if I'm sitting here and I'm tight and tense and I start to overbreathe, what it does is obviously it sends a message to the brain because the mechanics are tense, and it will start to trigger that red side of the nervous system, which will start to pour adrenaline into my body. So you end up being switched on through stress hormones. What happens then is the brain starts looking for a reason why you are feeling tense or why you're feeling anxious. And this is where we can misattribute the reason why we're feeling like that. I mean, I see a lot of teenagers with anxiety, and you know, you cannot be anxious when you're breathing well. So the first thing I do is educate them about the importance of breathing well to turn down this anxiety. And they're so relieved that it is not just all thought or emotion triggering these sensations, that they've got some control over it. So when they learn to breathe well or do what we call rescue breathing, they can actually turn the system down themselves, that it is also very much a biomechanical and physiological function versus just thought. Is that what you were after?
Yes, and would you share a little more of that? Obviously, there's so much more detail in your book, but I can't think of any number of parents right now with kids dealing with the anxiety of a modern life and social media and always on, and now this background noise of COVID. And could you share a little more just to sort of illustrate what's possible to help young people with anxiety? Again, some are going to need more than some breathing advice, but for go ahead.
I mean, yeah, what I would say to, and I do a lot of education for adolescents, and especially going into an exam. So pre the exam, you know, you want to make sure your blood sugars are stable. So that's good eating. That's not quite my field, but it is important and does have, if you're not breathing well and your blood sugars are unstable, you're in a bad state. But what I get them to do is a grounding exercise where I get them to feel their feet, because if you're feeling your feet, your shoulders aren't tense. Then when in doubt, breathe out. Even a breath out the mouth just to calm them down. Then in, nose low and slow. Breathe out, pause before you go into the exam. When you sit down, before you turn the paper over, do the same thing again. Feet on the ground. When in doubt, breathe out. Nose low and slow. Pause, then turn over the paper. If someone finds that they're starting to really rev up and get into anxiety, we've got something called Bradcliffe 5x5s, where you breathe into cupped hands for 5 breaths, rest for 5 breaths, back into your hands for 5 breaths, and keep doing that until your brain starts to clear. And what that does is it just retains some of the CO2 back into the body that starts to stabilize that red and green I was talking about. So it tends to take the body back into the green, rest and repair. Because if you're over breathing and you're revving high, you head into the green zone. The red zone. It's like sitting and revving a car in fifth gear at the lights. You're not doing your vehicle any good. You need to turn the gears down. So when you're breathing out and slowing it down, you're turning your gears down.
This similar advice also for anyone who's about to do something that really stresses them performance-wise, perhaps speak publicly.
Totally.
Yeah, same thing.
Yep. And absolutely.
For sports performance, it's interesting because it's about making sure you don't overcook before you go and perform, but also are there specific skills for maximising your breath control in physical performance?
Oh, yeah, and the same principles apply. You know, number one, Number one for everybody is to learn what we call as baseline calm, and that is what is breathing while at rest. Now, if you've got that, you know that the body at the end of the day, when you sleep, should be coming back to rest, repair, and regenerate. That is what we always fundamentally teach. So it's no matter who you are and doing what, that is number one. Number two is breathing with movement, and there is such a thing called cadence. If you breathe well, when you move well, you save a lot of energy. It's much more energy efficient. And then obviously for an athlete, it is sport specific. So you've got all the different phases when you're looking at sport that are considered. Another really groovy thing we do is called inspiratory muscle training, where you actually work on strengthening the diaphragm muscle, because it is a massive muscle and it's the only skeletal muscle designed to work 24 hours a day. And if that is strong, you know, it creates a really good pump. Prior to this, I was just educating my physios around the world, and a lot of them are doing a lot of COVID work. And they've found that inspiratory muscle training, even for people in ICU, on the wards, coming through to rehab, it has massive, massive beneficial outcomes because the muscle is strong. And that muscle draws the air or pulls the lungs down and enables them to aerate and move effectively past. It is an incredible cardiovascular pump. So, you know, when we talk breathing, breathing is fundamental, and it's so misunderstood. A breathing exercise would be to use it in yoga or to use it in Pilates. But what we teach as physiotherapists, is fundamental, the first step. Then go and do whatever exercise you want on top of it. So go and do your yoga, because that will be much more beneficial. Do your meditation. But the fundamentals are what we teach, really. And it's the first step, I believe.
We are speaking, and you've got lots of questions coming in, as always, listeners. Thank you to Tanya Clifton-Smith, right. How to Take a Breath. Let's do some of those. I would like, I still want to come back to some of the post-traumatic stress stuff, because what a wonderful gift to help anyone living with that long term. But could we tick off a couple, if you don't mind, of questions?
Yep.
Can you ask about reducing blood pressure through breathing for increasing lung capacity? Is there any recent research?
Well, I wouldn't talk about lung capacity, because that you're talking about something very different. When you talk about lung capacity, you start to get into health and respiratory, and you start to look at, okay, is there an organic disorder such as asthma or COPD, chronic lung disease? But for blood pressure, yes, there is a lot of research, and because mechanically what happens is when the diaphragm pumps and moves, it has an effect on the baroreceptors of the heart, which we know then chemically goes back to the respiratory centre in the brain. The lower and slower this is, of course, it's going to help with blood pressure and that whole cardiovascular system. So, yes, there is absolute hard science behind effective breathing and respiration and blood pressure.
Hi there, Catherine. Thrilled to hear Tanya this morning. Tanya literally saved my life in 1998 when my breathing got so bad I was waking nauseous. Worse than morning sickness and a fog. After 5 sessions, I was a new person. Can you ask her if she still uses a bag of rice on the abdomen? So easy.
Thank you, whoever that is.
Joy.
Yeah, well, yes, when you are, something you can try at home is that, you know, getting into a nice position. We call it the Bradcliffe Beach Pose, where your knees are bent and maybe your arms above your head if you can. Then we place just a gentle weight over the belly button, and that's not for a weight for strength, it's a weight for biofeedback. And the biofeedback is the awareness of what should be moving first and most is your belly. So, yes, we do that. We still use wheat bags. Anything you've got at home, it's just a really good indicator of where you should be breathing when you're at rest.
Here is a good question. Do you breathe out through your nose or mouth?
Oh, it should always be your nose. Nose, 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 the whole way.
It takes practice.
At rest, we need to breathe in and out our nose. Of course, the mouth is a safety valve when we increase our cardiovascular fitness. Like when you're running full on, yes, you need to actually exhale out your mouth and inhale out your mouth perhaps. So the mouth is a safety valve for maybe when you've got cold or virus and your nose is blocked. Otherwise, nasal breathing is so, so important. I've also helped co-author another book that is all about the nose with an otolaryngologist, Dr. Jim Bartley, and We could talk all day just about the nose, but no, it must be your nose.
Well, you've got fans coming in all over the place, someone talking about this book by Jim Bartley, someone else saying they've used your method from a physiotherapist at Havelock North Physiotherapy, and that this person does it daily.
Brilliant.
And someone else says, I went to Breathing Works many years ago after the death of a friend in a major armed robbery at work. It changed my life. It really works. It feels amazing to breathe correctly, and I've lived by it for the last 20 years. Some practical questions coming in, though. People asking about how to convert to nose breathing. What do you think about mouth taping? Well, there's different kinds of appliances you can use it at night, right, as a means of trying to convert.
I would say, and you know, breathing is having its day in the sun because of COVID internationally anyway. And there is a lot of, even the TikTokers are getting in on how to breathe well. I am a medical professional, and I would always say, should you have a problem, please go and see a medical health professional that is an expert in this field, because you start doing something wrong and it can have catastrophic effects, meaning you have to figure out why you cannot nasally breathe. If you've got a bony obstruction and you're taping your mouth up, I think you're going to end up in pretty hot water. Mm. So you need to figure out why. Is it because there's a structural problem there, or is it because it's inflammatory or misuse? So you must unpack the reason why. And that you need to go and see a specialist or work through a series of steps yourself to figure out why you cannot nasally breathe.
That
mouth
bony,
taping is
that bony obstruction can be a thing, can't it, Tanya? You can have a bone spur or something that can inhibit.
Yeah, or you could have had broken it during playing rugby. You know, it's important. Mouth taping is our last resort of treatment protocols. Nasal rinsing is my first. I love it.
Okay. Now, please ask, is belly first for the exhalation as well as the inhalation?
Yes.
Thank you. Someone else is asking about the impacts of wearing masks on breathing.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it is, our colleagues internationally have found, especially those wearing masks 24/7, it's pretty hard work. We've done a lot of research, or there has been a lot of research, to figure out, are you affected by altered chemistry, meaning, you know, does your carbon dioxide go down or up, or oxygen go down or up? And they've shown mask wearing does not affect that. What happens, though, is when people put a mask on, they feel claustrophobic and start mouth breathing. Therein lies the problem. So we've actually got a video where we teach individuals how to breathe well using a mask. The key thing there is try and nasally breathe while you've got your mask on.
Sorry, one more question on asthma. Could you just comment, I'm just trying to find the question now, but on how this can benefit people. Here we go. In my 40s, my asthma was out of control. I did a breathing course of Dr. Buteyko, another method. I've been completely free of asthma for 12 years. Can it be very impactful on asthma, again, while getting proper medical oversight?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, anyone with a organic respiratory disorder, absolutely. We know that you've got your organic disorder, such as asthma or COPD or whatever it may be. But on top of that, you can have the breathing dysfunction. So if the breathing dysfunction is corrected, we know with people with asthma, you correct the breathing pattern and dysfunction, you can live with asthma as if you have not even got it. So 100% anybody with breathing organic disorders, I would highly recommend you get an assessment and you get a treatment protocol that works for you. But definitely it works.
For those with PTSD or related considerable trauma and physiologically allied issues, this is something you have used in practice, as we said, right back since the 90s, Tanya.
Yeah, it is. And that therein becomes a multidisciplinary treatment protocol. So we work a lot with psychologists, clinical psychologists, because you need your cognitive behavioural therapy and perhaps, you know, pharmacology, as well as your body and breath regulation. So it's a whole body protocol to work on together. And we found that that actually works, and it works well, versus working and one in alienation. So I know that God, internet, I mean, I suppose an area that I'm fixated on at the moment as well is adolescence, because anxiety is on the rise. And if you look at the stats in the States of the amount of kids that are on anti-anxiety or antidepressants, it's just heart-wrenching. So there's so much that they can do and you can do to assist them with self-regulation skills, with self-awareness skills of their own body and physiology to help them navigate, which I think is probably a tricky time in life, going through adolescence. It's incredible skill to use in combination with other practices.
That most fundamental thing, the breath and breathing. Thank you so much for your time, Tanya. Tanya Clifton-Smith, How to Take a Breath, is published by Random House.